It's not true that no one needs you anymore. These exasperated words came from an elderly woman sitting behind me on a late-night flight from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. The plane was dark and quiet, and most people were either sleeping or watching a movie. I was working on my laptop, feverishly trying to finish something now completely lost to memory, but that, at the time, seemed to be of crucial importance to my life, happiness, and future. A man I assumed to be her husband murmured almost inaudibly in response. Again, his wife. Oh, stop saying it would be better if you were dead. Now they had my full attention. I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I couldn't help it. I listened half with human empathy and half with the professional fascination of a social scientist. I formed an image of the husband in my head. I imagined someone who had worked hard all his life in relative obscurity, someone disappointed at his dreams unfulfilled. Perhaps the career he never pursued, the schools he never attended, the company he never started. Now, I imagined, he was forced to retire, tossed aside like yesterday's news. As the lights switched on after touchdown, I finally got a look at the desolate man. I was shocked. I recognized him. He was well-known, famous even. Then, in his mid-80s, he had been universally beloved as a hero for his courage, patriotism, and accomplishments of many decades ago. I have admired him since I was young. As he passed up the aisle of the plane behind me, passengers recognized him and murmured with veneration. Standing at the door of the cockpit, the pilot recognized him and said, echoing my own thoughts, "Sir, I have admired you since I was a little boy." The older man, apparently wishing for death just a few minutes earlier, beamed at the recognition of his past glories. I wondered, which more accurately describes the man? The one filled with joy and pride right now, or the one 20 minutes ago, telling his wife he might as well be dead? I couldn't get the cognitive dissonance of that scene out of my mind over the following weeks. It was the summer of 2012, shortly after my 48th birthday. I was not world famous like the man on the plane, but my professional life was going pretty well. I was the president of a prominent Washington, D.C. think tank that was prospering. I had written some best-selling books. People came to my speeches. My columns were published in the New York Times. I had found a list written on my 40th birthday, 8 years earlier, of my professional goals. Those that, if accomplished, would, I was sure, bring me satisfaction. I had met or exceeded all of them, and yet I wasn't particularly satisfied or happy. I had gotten my heart's desire, at least as I imagined it, but it didn't bring me the joy I envisioned. And even if it did deliver satisfaction, could I really keep this going? If I stayed at it 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, which basically I did with my 80-hour work weeks, at some point my progress would slow and stop. Many days I was thinking this slowing had already started. And what then? Would I wind up looking back on my life and telling my long-suffering wife, Esther, that I might as well be dead? Was there any way to get off the hamster wheel of success and accept inevitable professional decline with grace? Maybe even turn it into opportunity? Though these questions were personal, I decided to approach them as the social scientist that I am, treating them as a research project. It felt unnatural, like a surgeon taking out his own appendix. I plunged ahead, however, and for the last 9 years, I have been on a personal quest to turn my future from a matter of dread into an opportunity for progress. I delved into divergent literatures, from my own field in social science to adjacent work in brain science, philosophy, theology, and history. I dug into the biographies of some of the most successful people in history. I immersed myself in the research on people who strive for excellence and interviewed hundreds of leaders, from heads of state to hardware store owners. What I found was a hidden source of anguish that wasn't just widespread, but nearly universal among people who have done well in their careers. I came to call this the striver's curse. People who strive to be excellent at what they do often wind up finding their inevitable decline terrifying. Their success is increasingly unsatisfying, and their relationships lacking. The good news is that I also discovered what I was looking for, a way to escape the curse. Methodically, I built a strategic plan for the rest of my life, giving me the chance to have a second half of adulthood that is not only not disappointing, but happier and more meaningful than the first.